Hello and welcome to the Revisiting Old Favourites podcast in the Inner Sanctum. I would like to also say Easter blessings to everybody. Last week we were waiting the Triduum, now we're in the Easter octave, at least as I'm recording this we are. So we are continuing, of course, on our pilgrimage with Hilaire Belloc on the path to Rome. He's now heading south on the final part of the pilgrimage, having started off in northern France, having traversed the Swiss Alps and moving down into the northern Italy, the Italian lakes, and now he's in Tuscany and making slow but steady progress. So without any further ado, let's continue with Hilaire Belloc on the path to Rome. You do not see the River Po till you are close to it. Then, a little crook in the road being passed, you come between high trees, and straight out before you, level with you, runs the road into and over a very wide mass of tumbling water. It does not look like a bridge, it looks like a quay. It does not rise, it has all the appearance of being a strip of road shaved off and floated on the water. And this is because it passes over boats, as do some bridges over the Rhine. At Cologne, I believe, and certainly at Kiel, for I once sat at the end of that and saw a lot of sad German soldiers drilling, a memory which later made me understand, one, why they can be outmarched by Latins, two, why they impress travellers and civilians, three, why the governing class in Germany take care to avoid common service, four, why there is no promotion from the ranks, and five, why their artillery is too rigid and not quick enough. It also showed me something intimate and fundamental about the Germans, which Tacitus never understood and which all our historians miss. They are, of necessity, histrionic. Note, I do not say it is a vice of theirs. It is a necessity of theirs, an appetite. They must see themselves on stage. Whether they do things well or ill, whether it is their excellent army with its ridiculous parade, or their 18th century sans souci with avenues and surprises, or their national legends with gods in wigs and strong men in tights, they must be play actors to be happy and therefore to be efficient. And if I were Lord of Germany and desire to lead my nation, and to be loved by them, I should put great golden feathers on my helmet. I should use rhetorical expressions, spout monologues in public, organise wide cavalry charges at reviews, and move through life generally to the crashing of an orchestra. For by doing this, even a vulgar, short and diseased man who dabbled in stocks and shares and was led by financiers could become a hero and do his nation good. Lector, what is all this? Auctor, it is a parenthesis. Lector, it is good to know the names of the strange things one meets with on one's travels. Auctor, so I return to where I branched off and tell you that the River Po is here crossed by a bridge of boats. It is a very large stream, halfway across. It is even a trifle uncomfortable to be so near the rush of the water on the trembling pontoons. And on that day its speed and turbulence were emphasised by the falling rain, for the marks of the rain on the water showed the rapidity of the current, and the silence of its fall framed and enhanced the swirl of the great river. Once across, it is a step up into Piacenza. A step through mud and rain. On my right was that plain where Barbarossa received, and was glorified by, the rising life of the 12th century. There the Renaissance of our Europe saw the future glorious for the first time since the twilight of Rome, and being full of mourning they imagined a new earth and gave it a lord. It was at Ronsalia, I think, in spring, and I wish I had been there. For in spring, even the Lombard plain, they say, is beautiful and generous. But in summer, I know by experience that it is cold, brutish, and wet. And so, in Piacenza, it rained, and there was mud, till I came to a hotel called the Moor's Head, in a very narrow street, and entering it, I discovered a curious thing. The Italians live in palaces. I might have known it. They are the impoverished heirs of a great time. Its garments cling to them, but their rooms are too large for the modern penury. I found these men eating in a great corridor, in a hall, as they might do in a palace. I found high painted ceilings and many things of marble, a vast kitchen, and all the apparatus of the great houses, at the service of a handful of contented, unknown men. So in England, when we have worked out our full fate, happier but poorer men will sit in the faded country houses, a community, or an inn, or impoverished squires. And rough food will be eaten under mouldering great pictures, and there will be offices or granaries in the galleries of our castles. And where Lord Saxonthorpe, whose real name is Helpstein, now plans our policy, common Englishmen will return to the simpler life, and there will be dogs, and beer, and catches upon winter evenings. For Italy also once gathered by artifice the wealth that was not of her making. He was a good man, the innkeeper of this palace. He warmed me at his fire in his enormous kitchen, and I drank Malaga to the health of the cooks. I ate of their food. I bought a bottle of a new kind of sweet wine, called Vino Dolce, and I took the road. Lector, did you see nothing of Piacenza? Auctor, nothing, Lector. It was raining, and there was mud. I stood in front of the cathedral on my way out and watched it rain. It rained all along the broad and splendid Emilian Way. I had promised myself great visions of the Roman soldiery passing up that eternal road. It still was stamped with the imperial mark, but the rain washed out its interest and left me cold. The Apennines also, rising abruptly from the plain, were to have given me revelations at sunset. They gave me none. Their foothills appeared continually on my right. They themselves were veiled. And all these miles of road fade into the confused memory of that intolerable plain. The night at Firenzuola, the morning and second morning of this visitation, still cold, still heartless, and sodden with the abominable weather, shall form no part of this book. Things grand and simple of their nature are possessed, as you know, of a very subtle flavour. The larger music, the more majestic lengths of verse called epics, the exact in sculpture, the classic drama, the most absolute kinds of wine, require a perfect harmony of circumstance for their appreciation. Whatever is strong, poignant, and immediate in its effect is not so difficult to suit. Farce, horror, rage, or what not, these a man can find in the arts even when his mood may be heavy or disturbed. Just as, to take their parallel in wines, strong bon will always rouse a man. But that which is cousin to the immortal spirit, and which has, so to speak, no colour but mere light, that needs for its recognition so serene an air of abstraction and of content as makes its pleasures seem rare in this troubled life, and causes us to recall it like a descent of the gods. For who, having noise around him, can strike the table with pleasure at reading The Misanthrope, or in mere thirst or in fatigue praise Chinon wine? Who does not need for either of these perfect things recollection, a variety of according conditions and a certain easy plenitude of the mind. So it is with the majesty of plains and with the haunting power of their imperial roads. All you that have had your souls touched at the innermost and have attempted to release yourselves in verse and have written trash, and who know it, be comforted. You shall have satisfaction at last, and you shall attain fame in some other fashion, perhaps in private theatricals, or perhaps in journalism. You will be granted a prevision of complete success, and your heart shall be filled. But you must not expect to find this mood on the Emilian Way when it is raining. All you that feel youth slipping past you and that are desolate at the approach of age, be merry. It is not what it looks like from in front and from outside. There is a glory in all completion, and all good endings are but shining transitions. There will come a sharp moment of revelation when you shall bless the effect of time. But this divine moment, it is not on the Emilian Way, in the rain, that you should seek it. All you that have loved passionately and have torn your hearts asunder in disillusions, do not imagine that things broken cannot be mended by the good angels. There is a kind of splice called the long splice, which makes a cut rope seem what it was before. It is even stronger than before and can pass through a block. There will descend upon you a blessed hour when you will be convinced as by a miracle, and you will suddenly understand redintegratio amoris. Amoris redintegratio, a Latin phrase. But this hour you will not receive in the rain on the Emilian Way. That is actually splendid prose, messed up, of course, by my appalling pronunciation and enunciation of the Latin. But that's so be it. Belloc, the genius being rendered by a plebeian like me. But as Chesterton reminds us, if a thing is worth doing, including A Pilgrimage to Rome with Hilaire Belloc, it's worth doing badly. And on that note of ineptitude, happily confessed, I'll bid my adieu for this week from the Revisiting Old Favourites. Please do join me next week as we continue on our path to Rome with Hilaire Belloc. Until then, continue to have a blessed Easter season.